Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies.
You know, the what's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And what is going on, everybody, on this glorious Tuesday morning? You know, I don't know. I got to tell you something. I don't know where to start. Okay, I guess let's start with the markets. They are as dull as dull can be. Now, the old school of thought is never short a dull market. And of course, I've been short, so it ain't good. It hasn't been feeling too good lately. And of course, I'm not going to fight it. It is just volume continues to disappear. It continues to dry up. And we've got all kinds of crap being laid out there. I mean, I cannot believe that Barron's made a call for 3% growth. I cannot believe that we are actually being sucked into this, again, this lull, this sense of security that the Fed will be there to help us. They're not helping us. Okay, let's understand that the Federal Reserve, the central banks, are not helping us. All they are doing is creating a bigger problem that's going to hurt us much longer down the road. Now, let's take a look at something that I think is important, and that would be the payroll taxes. Okay, we're doing so well, and we've created so many jobs. Do you realize that with all the jobs we've created and all the bragging that our president does and our Labor Department does and all of our politicians do, that payroll taxes dropped from to about 1.8%, which means that although maybe more people are working, they're making a hell of a lot less money because payroll tax isn't a write-off. It isn't something you can play with. Payroll tax is an automatic number that you take out of everybody's check, okay, and that's dropping. So that does not bode very well for their wonderful growth and jobs recovery program that they keep bragging about. And I keep saying, no, we are not seeing jobs growth. And of course, that is more factual evidence that we're not seeing any jobs growth. Now, what about, okay, everybody's saying, well, this is nothing like 2008. Well, okay, we now have Bank of America offering 3% loans going around Fannie Mae and FHA. Why? Well, because Fannie Mae's in trouble again. Oh, shocking. Shocking, I tell you. So now that becomes an issue. And of course, when everybody keeps telling you that it's not, it usually is. They just don't recognize it. But of course, who would expect a bunch of librarians to understand how the business world is actually working? And I'm not insulting librarians. I apologize. And I really meant to say book readers. But my apologies to any librarians that are listening to me because I'm not insulting you. I'm actually trying to compliment you. But anyways, so now we've got the problem with Fannie Mae, Bank of America, okay, payroll taxes falling. And of course, our Keynesian economists keep saying, there's no problem, nothing to worry about. Okay. Now, we look at that, and of course, now we look at China. Now, China has more bad debt than anybody. They do a lousy job of bookkeeping. Okay. In other words, what I'm saying here is that they went to the school of accounting where whatever you own you market the highest possible value so you can make sure, even if it's not worth it, you get a good mark on your balance sheet to artificially make it look like you have more than you do. The collateralized loan situation is getting ugly again. Sound familiar? Does this, any of this sound familiar? Are we seeing this again? Okay. So now we've got that issue to deal with. Now, a lot of those collateralized loans were through the oil companies, and the banks, of course, are dumping those loans for pennies on the dollar just to get out so that they don't have another problem, another meltdown. But it's amazing how we don't think about it and we don't care. And of course, the economists continue to tell us, well, there's not a problem. So what? Why are we worried? So now we've got the not problem there, the not problem here, the not problem there. Yet we have no growth. We have no jobs. We have a very, very pitiful economy. And of course, oil is going up and everybody says, oh, well, that's bullish for the market. But we see a market that is really in, nowhere's land right now. I mean, again, it's up against resistance. It should be sold, but selling it here would not be wise, although everything suggests that it should be. But because, again, as long as the market remains dull, the market will drift higher. Remember this. There is always money flowing into the market every day from buyers. Okay? Why is that? Because IRAs, funds, mutual funds, they're always buying. Okay? So they're always bringing money in to the market. They're buying high and low. They're really not concerned about it. They're just buying dividend reinvestment. There's always buying going on. So in lack of sellers, or with the lack of sellers, the markets will drift higher. That's why we talk about the old adage, never sell into a dull market. That becomes an important point if you're a more active trader, because even though you want to be active, the markets themselves may choose not to be. And that is really more of the issue. So everything being equal, the markets will tend to try to drift a little bit higher. Now, again, you can benefit from that if you want to step in. And what's going to happen, in my estimation, is one day we're going to walk in and the market's just going to be down 1,000. And that is the more serious problem that I see now. Okay, not that it'll be down 1,000. I don't care about that part. My concern is that we're now getting to the point, at least the last few weeks, that all of the action takes place overnight. Now, if you look back at yesterday, you saw the gap higher, okay, and then basically nothing. You had one attempt to sell right before the 9:30 bell. Then we rallied back up and then basically sat. And then late in the day, after 4 o'clock, the futures sold off. In fact, the Spiders, the SPY, sold off 80 cents after the 4 o'clock close. Now, I'm not ringing an alarm bell. I'm just saying that so a lot of the action is happening when we're not even around. So that becomes a problem. Okay, so at the end of the day, it's a dull market. Let's relax. Let's not try to force the action. Let's hold back and wait. Because, again, there'll be plenty of opportunities. So no need for you to rush, hurry, to get in, to get clobbered. Sit back, relax. And don't worry about it. This is the Bubba Show. Make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. Really a great platform. It is my platform. It is the Badger's platform of choice. We do enjoy it. We like it. Also, again, I'm going to urge you to check out our hedging program at BubbaTrading.com. I think if you're not getting in, you're making a little bit of a mistake. But again, that's just me. I'm only trying to help my friends here at the Bubba Show. Make sure you get every episode if you miss one at libertytalk.fm on demand. Be one of the hundreds of thousands of people that download it every single month. This is the Bubba Show Top Awards. I will be right back after break. Yeah. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with you. And, you know, we've got Apple. And we've got a problem. Houston, we've got a problem. Or Apple, we've got a problem. Now, obviously, this has been a much talked about event. And I'm curious as to what your opinions are on this subject matter. That the FBI is insisting that Apple give them the encryption code or the key to unlock the phone of the terrorists. Now, that's a fairly slippery slope, okay? And, of course, I hope all of you are with me in wanting to rid the world of the ISIS terrorists. I hope you're all with me in wanting to rid of these thugs that are only out to danger and harm us, that have a hatred for Americans, for everybody. They hate everybody, okay? They probably hate themselves. So is Apple doing the right thing by not turning over for privacy? Now, again, you can make a case for either side of this argument. There's the diehard privacy. I mean, because one of the problems, okay, is that once we had the terrorist stuff, you know, that became an automatic, okay, well, now we can investigate because you're a prospective terrorist, so we can invade your privacy without anything. Now, I don't really have that much of a problem with any of that, okay, because, again, I personally don't have anything that's private that I'm worried about, right? I'll tell you right here what I'm thinking. So it's not like I'm locking up anything. So I don't know what you think, but I'll tell you what I think. I think that Apple is using this as a marketing ploy. I think that they're in a major battle, not for survival. They're obviously a great company, but in a major battle with the Droid system and Google. And I think that they're worried about losing market share, and they're kind of trying to use this as a little bit of a marketing ploy. And I personally would be very disappointed if that comes out to be the actual truth, that's why they're making such a fuss. Now, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I'm really not. I'm giving you both sides of this argument because, you know, I want the right thing to be done. I know what I think is right, and obviously I have my opinions, but I'm certainly concerned that Apple is more using this for a marketing ploy. But on a bigger concern from my viewpoint is this. Our president, Mr. Obama, has refused to go after these guys, no matter how many times his generals and his advisors tell him that ISIS needs to be wiped off the map. He continues to ignore the what I would call taking care of a business or going out and kicking some ass. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but I would like to see us go out and do some ass kicking. I would like to see us go take care of it. And then there wouldn't be as much of a problem to discuss. We might not have had the San Bernardino catastrophe. We might not have had the Paris disaster. And who else knows what they're doing now? Okay. I know one thing for sure, that they want to kill us. They hate us. And if they had the bomb, they'd somehow figure out a way to drop it. That's what I believe. But what I am concerned about is Apple using this as a marketing ploy. That would be very disturbing on my part. Is it the right thing? Should the FBI just hire one of Apple's engineers and have them undo it? Or don't we have somebody in this country who has the capability of unlocking that code? I'm just curious. I don't know. I mean, I would think with the people, the counterterrorism and all this stuff going on, you would think they might be able to find somebody to do that without Apple. And then they wouldn't be asking Apple to do what they're pretending. And again, I don't know what the answer is that they're saying that they don't want to do. But you would think that in our country, that somebody could unlock that phone. I mean, we got a lot of smart people around here. I mean, we got jets that fly by themselves. We got all these things going on. Now, again, you've got big, this is a, this is like a one side or the other argument. Where do you sit? But again, I sit from a business standpoint saying, you know, if Apple is trying to take advantage of this, I'm very disappointed. I would like to see the terrorists gone. I think we would all like to see that. I think that that becomes an issue. I mean, again, it's not only your safety, it's your children, your grandchildren, anybody, people that you know. I mean, you know, again, I lost a lot of friends in the 9/11, and certainly I don't want to see a repeat of that again. I just think that we have to, I think, as a nation, as a country, we need to have a leader strong enough to say, hey, it's time to go get them. Because I believe, I have no knowledge of this, but I believe that our soldiers would like to do so. Okay. I believe that's what they're trained for. I believe by staying with just this ridiculous bombing that they're doing, okay, it's not doing anything. Okay. And I believe we need to go in and take them out. And that, I think, is something that's more important than all of this, because if you continue to sit back and wait to see if there's going to be a problem, then all you're doing is reacting. I think at some point you have to take the offensive. Okay. And I think this is that point. Okay. And I'd love to hear your thoughts of what you're thinking. Do you agree, disagree? You know, Bubba at BubbaTrading.com. Either way, again, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but my opinion is that we need to be who we are, the United States of America, and we need to go take care of business. And sitting back and waiting and fighting with Apple, okay, is, you know, again, in this case, I get it, I understand it, and I'm not saying either way, I'm just saying that I get it. But if we had taken care of business to begin with, now this is not something that just happened yesterday. We're talking about these terrorist attacks have been going on for years. Again, you know, not in the same scale that they were of 9/11, but certainly they've been out there. So don't you think it's time that we go take care of business? I mean, you know, that's why we are the United States of America. We are the most powerful nation in the world. And we have the troops looking to do it. We've got the generals telling us to do it. And yet, here we sit. So instead of taking care of business, we talk about what we're supposed to do with these other things. And to me, that's a bigger tragedy. Again, you know, if I could figure out how to unlock the phone for him, I'd unlock it. If I could figure it out. Again, I think there's ways to do this. And I just don't know that this is the right way to do it. I mean, I think if you've exhausted your efforts to unlock that phone, I mean, this didn't happen yesterday. I mean, we're going back, you know, months ago now. Why is it just coming out now? And against Apple, they've already helped in many cases. This is not the first time. So why are they making a marketing stand now? So you can pick your poison here. You can pick your side of this debate. Certainly, the problem that I see is it really comes down from the top the top of the food chain, because if we were taking care of business, a lot of this wouldn't even be an issue today, in my opinion. I do believe that. I believe that if we took them out, then we might not have had any of these other bad situations. And I think that's the important thing. You know, we're Americans. We need to take care of Americans. And I know not everybody on my show is from America, but I mean, we are the most powerful nation in the world. We need to act like it. Sometimes you got to be on the offense. Sometimes you got to be a bully, because when you're getting, when the thugs and the gangsters are trying to bully you and you're just taking it, all you're allowing them to do is build and build and build. And that brings us to the economy part of this equation. You know, the weaker the economy gets, the bigger they're going to get, because this goes back to, again, this is just like Hitler. Okay. Times are bad. Things are troubling. People, they're looking for an answer and they'll go anywhere. And, you know, that was just an opinion. And, you know, again, I'd love to hear from any of you on what your opinions are, but that will do it for this segment. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out our friends at ThinkOrSwim, built by traders for traders. Great platform. I urge you strongly to check out BubbaTrading.com. You will find a lot of great articles. You will find a lot of great products that you may need that may help your trading. And if not, you'll at least find some information and be able to sign up for my newsletter. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. You ever miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm. Join the rest and get with the best. That's at LibertyTalk.fm. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich. We will be right back after the break.
You're so delicious. You're so, so.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Chalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwich, and it is time for my guy, Mike McClone. What's up, Mr. McClone?
Well, hello, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
Listen, I got to have my experts. You're my guy. You're my expert. And you got a whole bunch of new dynamics for me now. And you know, it's funny because I wrote for this week on the about the what I call the commodity crush. And you know, actually, we touched 40-year lows in the Bloomberg Commodity Index, and I just thought it was interesting, and I know you've got some interesting numbers that you want to talk about, and that is the, I guess, the multiple, the divider or the multiplier between silver and gold and oil and gold. So tell us what you're looking at there, my boy.
Yeah, well, I was looking at some analysis this last week, and I'm still, you know, we've been still very biased and bullish on gold and silver, and certainly those two, and they're finally starting to perk up. But gold's actually been doing quite well. But I was kind of getting my axe to grind was in silver, and part of the reason is I've been looking at gold versus other commodities. So first, let's look at gold versus silver. The ratio is currently 80 to 1. 80 means it takes 80 ounces of silver for 1 ounce of gold, if you look at it that way. And that means gold is pretty expensive relative to silver. To put that in context, the actual peak in this ratio was in November of 2008. That date should ring some bells for some people. Peak was around 84. And the highest ever in this entire ratio was 100. So it's getting near the upper end of the range. And the low just recently around 2011 was about 32 or so. So it's starting to show, number one, that gold's potentially getting expensive, or a lot of other commodities are getting cheap. But I think the first way to look at it is it has to mean something when gold is this attractive or this rich versus other commodities like silver. And number two, it should factor in how we invest. So it's kind of part of the reason I've been a little bit more biased to buying some silver lately. Still love gold. It's just kind of hard to get excessively bullish here because, you know, if it does continue to rally, which I think it will, silver should catch up. But one thing that was really striking watching this ratio was the gold versus oil ratio. If you just take the simple price of gold divided by oil, that ratio is the highest ever. It's above 40, meaning it takes 40 barrels of oil effectively to equate to the dollar value of 1 ounce of crude oil. To put that in context, the previous high before this year was from 1986 at 32. I mean, that's 30 years ago. So that's got to mean something. It just, to me, number one, it's really an indication of something that's really bad in the global economy, where gold is this rich and this attractive and people investing in it that much. And it's also an indication of how we have to be careful of how we invest and what we should be doing and looking forward to.
Well, that's your Federal Reserve, my boy. I mean, you know, but, you know, hey, you know what? It is what it is. But, you know, so we saw a market, you know, we had talked about this last week and we had saw that bounce. And, of course, last week was a pretty unusual week. I mean, not that it was up and not that it was up, you know, quite a bit dollar wise. I mean, that's, you know, the problem is now, you know, we're at such high numbers that, you know, for the market to go up and down 100, 200 points a day doesn't mean anything in percentage wise. I mean, it's no different than, you know, when I first started trading and it was, the Dow was 1,000, you know, a 10 point up move. But the action was kind of squirrely because it kind of spiked up and held every day until, you know, until Friday and kind of churned around. But I look at this, Mike, as just another great potential selling opportunity as a trader, for sure. I mean, I think that the markets are done, and I think that, you know, we might could go a little bit higher, but I think more likely we go back lower and test those lows again, if not put in a new low. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's where I wanted to ask you a question, too. You being an ex-trader on the CBO, which is the option capital of the world, last week was options expiration. And the last 3 days of the week, the market really just locked in the narrowest, quietest trading range of the year, locked in on the 192 strike and the SPY, and just kind of hung there and did nothing. So as of when we come in Monday, most of those positions will be gone and expired. And, you know, the way I always look at it, most people buy puts and sell calls. So a lot of the derivatives are going to expire. I'm really looking at next week as a very vulnerable week. Number one, we've had a massive rally. But now what? Well, how do you think the option expiration might have affected the trade last week? And what do you think the implications might be for this coming week in the future?
Well, typically, you know, in past, you know, monthly and weekly options expirations haven't had a tremendous amount. But options expiration weeks tend to be up anyways. So that was almost like the perfect storm. But I do think that, you know, typically we do see some selling pressure after that. And I think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see the market's under pressure, I think, for a lot of reasons. But one is that I think that the rally itself was more built on a short squeeze. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about pinning a lot in different options and different equities. And everything kind of pinned right near a number, which means that's where the most amount of options will expire worthless. And of course, if you're selling them, you're happy about that. So I think that, you know, from your perspective, you're asking, I think we go lower here. I think you might even see some velocity in this next sale. I mean, again, the up move, other than the Thursday, Friday, was not very exciting. It basically wasn't a trading opportunity. It was basically, and we kind of went up and stopped and hung around. And even on Friday, you could see the market trading, and it broke hard, but the volatility didn't rise, which meant that, you know, you kind of saw that things were being held in check, and there wasn't going to be a major move because, again, when we come down to it, especially on light volume, it's a lot easier to kind of control the overall market. So I think you're correct in your assumption that we go lower. I think that we saw a lot of things close right at a number, and we saw a lot of that, what we call pinning. So I think that is a great point and a great thing to bring up, because most options expirations do slightly rally into them, and they kind of hold because you do have some adjusting going on, but that is much more prevalent on the quarterly expirations because the big firms still trade the quarterlies. They're still doing their baskets and things against quarterly options because that is still where the most liquidity lies. But I think we've reached a terrific selling opportunity. I think the risk reward model here states that you've got to be a seller here. I mean, you know, could we go up higher? Yeah, I think there's, if I were to put a number on it, I think there's 20 points to the upside in the S&P, and there's probably 120 to the downside. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to say, quite right there. I like to bring it to things that, you know, more tradable for us, like the SPY. You look at the high, after going down in the year, the high uptick in SPY has been 195. The first week of the year, the SPY settled at 192. Last week, it settled at 192. So that's been basically about 6 weeks of consolidation, which means the market's adjusting to lower levels, the trend's down, the risk is down, the fear is down. We talked about last week and being very careful about volatility, selling on the way down. Well, now we've had a rally, so I think the disciplined thing to do is the trend's been down, you're supposed to be looking to sell. But also it depends on what you do and how you do it. So one thing I really noticed last week, it's really been some of my favorite, is look at the bond market. The bond market was essentially unchanged last week, despite the fact that the stock market, SPY, was up 3%. So I still look at that as one of the better places, safer places, the best. And the main instrument I still like is TLT. In fact, if you look at total flows in ETFs this year, it's had the most inflows, TLT. I don't remember the exact number. I can pull that up by the end of the conversation, but quite high inflows. And TLT was actually unchanged last week. So I look at that as it's quasi kind of a bet that it's a way to, you know, you don't have to be getting short the stock market. You can sell, but another way to play it is to buy some TLTs or some bonds, and they did quite well. And one way to look at it, too, is this yield. There's always been, you know, what I still view is very attractive is one way to look at the U.S. 10-year note bond market is right now in U.S. bond market, you get 1.74%. Now, people might say that's not so great. You know what you get in the same bond market in Canada? 1%. And here's one good comparison. We know what you get in UK. It's like nothing, 1.3. But get this. How about in Spain? Not always known as the best credit in the world, 1.71%. If you invest in 10-year note bonds in Spain, you get less than the U.S. So that, to me, is an indication still how attractive U.S. bond market is. And the trend and momentum remains up in price, down in yield. So that's what I look at as very attractive. And if the stock market continues lower, you should do better in the bond market, but it's still the trend. I'm still worried about this negative interest rate factor, and we're still getting 1.7% in the U.S. So different ways to handle, different ways to look at it, but still an attractive area I still view is the U.S. bond market, long bond treasury market.
Well, I think a lot of interesting things have been occurring, and we've seen the bond market's rallying even into a stock market rally. I mean, you know, they had a chance to have the bonds on the run, and they did for a while, but they came right down to what I would have considered a key support level, and they bounced right off it and took off again, which is the same as the TLT. I think that there's an enormous amount of issues out there, Mike. I think that, you know, a lot of problems, and I'm tired of being, as they say, the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry. You know, there's a very interesting thing I want to ask you when we come back from the break, but here's what I want you to think about. Payroll taxes. Now, we've heard how good the jobs are getting, supposedly, and I keep saying bullshit, but we've got payroll taxes have been declining every year for the last 5 years, which indicates that the employment, the number may be getting better, but the income certainly isn't getting better, because that employment tax has nothing to do with anything except that's the percentage that the employer has to pay versus the employee, and that's declining, which indicates that people are not making anywhere near the money that they think they are, and that's a bigger problem. But when we come back from the break, we'll talk about that. I am with my man, Mike McClone. He is one of the number one analysts, understands it, loves the precious metals, an ETF guy. We're going to step out here for a break. If you ever miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. I'll get you a download of the show. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be right back. The Bubba Show. I was proud. Welcome back to the after Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man, my friend Mike McClone, ex-trader from the Chicago Board of Trade, a bond expert, but really a market expert. And again, a market expert because he will tell you exactly what he's seeing, and he will not make these ridiculous, imbecilic projections, which we talked about yesterday. But anyways, Mike, I looked at the number. Payroll tax is declining, and it's declining rapidly. And that indicates that payroll is not as big. So there may be jobs, but the payroll is not as big. What is your take from that, and what do you think?
I think it's a classic example of follow the money, and you just can't beat it for a good indication of what's happening with consumers in this economy. So this is one area I want to be careful a little bit, because I'm not an economist, I'm a strategist, but it's completely reflective of a view of what I've been talking about, is this trend in retail sales. Retail sales have been declining since peaking in 2011, and that's a significant trend down. I mean, yes, lately they bumped up a little bit, but what you just said as far as with payroll taxes, that's a clear indication that it's not so much what's happening now, it's what's been happening. It's the Fed tightening in the face of things trending against them. No wind in their sails, retail sales declining, inflation declining, things like that. And the forward-looking markets indicating that things are going to get very much worse. For instance, flattening curve, widening spreads, you know, where credit spreads widening, the collapsing commodity market and things like that. And one thing I mentioned in the previous segment, I just want to follow up on, is ETF flows. So far this year, the two biggest ETFs with the most inflows are GLD and TLT. That's gold and the bond market. They both had inflows of $3 billion each, so obviously people are quite concerned. And the two biggest outflow ETFs are QQQ, which is the NASDAQ 100, and IWM, which is the Russell 2000. So people are, what you mentioned is an indication of where the money is going. There, people are just not making a lot of money, even though the unemployment numbers are low. Retail sales show that, and the flows in ETFs are showing things that hopefully it's not going to get bad as 2008, but where people are actually putting their money and flowing into safe havens assets and getting out of equities.
Now, there's an interesting pattern developing in crude oil. Now, I'm bullish crude oil. I have been. Again, I'm a kind of guy, Mike, that, like, I bought corn at 350, and I bought wheat because that's like buying a long-term stock. Okay. I just feel that commodities are way underdone, and I'm willing to buy them and hold them. But there are in commodities, there are formations that we talk about in contango and backwardation. And every time they talk to me on air about oil, I go, well, look, I have to be bullish oil here because it's an unbelievable contango market here. I mean, each month is like 5% higher than the month before. Which is something is going on. It means something. Can you help us out here?
Yes, definitely. Well, one thing you look at this crude oil curve. I'm glad you mentioned this. The front contract is the March contract, and that expires on Monday. So they'll quote that on Monday. It's at $29 a barrel. And then come Tuesday, it switches to the next contract, which is the April contract. It's currently around $32 a barrel. So the market will be unchanged, and then the close of Monday, or they might even switch earlier, they'll say it's 29, and then they'll come in the next day and say, oh, it's 32, but the market's unchanged. And that's what contango is. It's got to switch to the next contract. And that's one thing that I find disconcerting as an investor. I want to buy crude oil. I think it's a very cheap versus things like gold, like we mentioned earlier, but you just can't do it unless you have a futures contract and you go further out the curve and you can buy, say, like the August of September contracts, which are around $35, and there's not much contango out there. And that's where it's kind of risky. If you buy some of these ETFs that just track the front one or two contracts, the contango will kill you even if you're right. And one, I just monetize this just a little bit. If the crude oil is unchanged at the end of the year and the contango is unchanged, if you buy some of these front month rolling ETFs and the contango stays the same, you're going to be down 20 to 30% just by rolling. So that's one thing I find disconcerting, and I'd be careful with the stock market, the stocks, because we know what's happening in the trend in the stock market. So, you know, sometimes it might look like a good thing, looks cheap, but actually expressing it is much more difficult to do.
Yeah, absolutely, and that is one of the things that we always have to be leery of when we're watching that. Now, there's another thing that bothers me, Mike, and, you know, obviously, when I was just trading and wasn't involved in the media, I never really watched because, you know, I didn't think there was much for me to listen to. And what really bothers me is they continue to tell the average investor that, well, the stock market, you know, is performing better than the 10-year, the dividend stock. And I go, well, now, wait a second. That's not true, because if you bought Walmart last year at 80 with its 3% dividend, yeah, the 3% is more than the 1.5 or 1.75 you get off of the 10-year, except that you just lost 25% of your value in the stock. So how good is the 3% yield? And I think that's one of the biggest fallacies, you know, in a short period of time, that dividend will overcome the overall market and it will overcome bonds. I mean, bonds, you know one thing, if you buy a bond, you're going to get paid. You may have to carry it for a while. You might have to carry it all the way to expiration, but it's going to pay off at value when it's done, whereas a stock could go out of business. What's your thoughts?
Well, in the old days when you had true dividends that were 6%, 7%, and 8%, does that matter? But one thing is dividends are, you know, there's a higher tax rate, and it's those days are really over. So I think, let's put this in context a little. It's very important to consider what's happened in the markets since the end of 2013. So if you include 2014, basically that entire year, but since the end of 2013, you look at this S&P, that actual spot price is up 4%. Now, with dividends, it's up 8%. That's great. It's a little bit better, but not a big difference. If you look at TLT, which is a basic investment, U.S. Treasury bonds, that investment is up 28% on the spot price. But with the coupons reinvested, it's up 36%. Now, this is just passive long only that anybody, you and I and us and Joe Sixpack and all of us can actually do by buying these ETFs. Gold over the same period is up only 1%. The key thing point I think about this is that was not supposed to happen. Virtually every expert that we expect for, you know, you and me, which I guess we're not considered experts, said that was not supposed to happen. The bond market was supposed to go down. You were supposed to lose money and the stock market was supposed to go up. So I think to rope this in, dividends matter, but what matters in the big picture is really this actual spot returns. And the bond market continues to trend higher, and it's actually accelerating. And the stock market was very rich the last few years, and it looks like it's rolling over and trending down. And good luck with those dividends. But if we do get near or close to a recession, and dividends only come when people stocks make money, they will be at risk of declining as the trend in the market goes down. Hopefully it won't, but to me, the bottom line here is since the end of 2013, if you bought TLT, you're up 36%. If you bought SPYs, you're up barely, maybe 8%. And by the way, one's accelerating higher, TLT, and the stock market's accelerating lower.
And that brings me to my next question. I know you follow this, the weekly averages, and I know that from what you told me that the VIX actually, even though it's been falling recently, is above its average, and the S&P is turning down. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, one thing you're going to hear, I think, for you and me and our listeners, you always hear a lot of the daily moving average. Oh, the 50-day and the 200-day. I say ignore them, partly because they're a great way to lose your hair. And you can't see me now, but I've lost a lot of hair trying to figure those out because they're the most widely watched, and when they go a certain way and everybody quotes them, people get caught up, and it makes the market move the wrong way. So I like to say watch the weeklies. They're a lot less weeklies charts. There's a lot less interference, a lot less noise, and two key things that happen. The 50-week moving average in the S&P 500 is turned down. This is like the first time since 2010, I think, or so. And one thing that's really disconcerting is the 50-week moving average in the VIX has turned above the 200-week moving average, which is really kind of similar. The last time this happened was in 2007. So these long-term trends without a lot of noise are shifting, and prudent investors should follow those shifts until proven wrong. And that's why I say ignore the dailies. They can really confuse you. Watch the weeklies, and the weeklies are significantly shifting, showing some major tectonic shifts in the plates. And that's where, like this week, we saw an up week. You're supposed to be responsive and say, thank you, probably give a little bit back to the market.
Mike McClone, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You bring so much light. You're like GE. You bring things, good things to light. Thanks for being on, man.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And again, make sure you check out BubbaTrading.com. We've got great programs we're offering now. We've got a new options program we just came out with, a 5-week course. But also, if you miss a show, LibertyTalk.fm on demand. Be one of the hundreds of thousands of people that download it every month. This has been The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you tomorrow. Already. Have a great day. Thank you. Wake up, Maggie. I
think I got... Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.